Thank you for joining us, friends, family, neighbors. You're watching and listening to Strictly For My Neighbors with your host, Madison Ray.
That guy, Ray.
And Daniel B. Picasso.
And of course, one of my best fucking friends, our special guest today, Mr. Charlie Reed.
Hey! Yeah.
Welcome to the show. So
Thank
glad you could join
you
us today.
Me.
Dude, the pleasure's mine. Singularly. These guys,
hours.
I don't know how they
I mean,
feel.
Hours.
I can't speak. I don't speak for them. I don't speak for them.
I mean, I'd have stayed home if it was that type of way, you know? So hours.
Yes.
The pleasure is hours.
I'm so glad we're all here today.
Yeah.
It's just good to be together. It's just good to be together.
It's a sunny day. Breeze is breezing.
Yeah, sweeping the clouds away.
That's right.
Yeah.
Winter's still winter. I'm sick of that bitch. She's got to get the fuck out.
Well, hey, I mean, at least it'll be lighter longer tomorrow.
Oh, man, I just remember that, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're on that daylight savings time.
Yeah, spring.
Somehow that's still a thing. I don't understand why.
Fucking farmers, that's why. Apparently.
It's not. That's not it.
I know what I'm saying, but it started because of farmers, and now nobody
it's
has
not.
Enough to ask them.
That's
anymore.
Not actually true.
Oh, well, enlighten me, please.
Y'all ready for story
Educate
time?
Educate me.
Y'all ready for story time?
Because I thought
it was educational moment.
Is this Iowa propaganda?
It actually started with Germany. Germans started something called military time, so their soldiers would have more time to, you know, murder, fight, and do the thing that soldiers do, right? So as that spread through Europe, the British also took on military time, which then naturally, of course, Americans had started taking on military time. But then everyone else realized it was bullshit and stopped, but we kept going for a little while longer. Mm. And then, like, I want to say in the 20s or 30s, like, we also decided, like, daylight saving is dumb.
Yeah.
Stop. So we didn't for like 20 years. And then in the 50s or whatever, like, the golf lobbyists were like, we can make millions of more dollars if we have one extra hour of sunlight per day. So they lobbied the federal government to reinstate daylight saving time so that golf courses could be open an extra hour, right? So that they could make that money. So it started with the golf lobby. Then, are you ready for the next actor in our murder mystery?
I know, right?
No, any guesses who steps up next?
Who?
Please, I want to hear who you think is going to step to the table.
I mean, Reagan.
Nixon,
Reagan,
Barack Obama.
Wrong.
That's
podcast.
Not right, Charlie.
A very young Barack.
Do I look like Joe Rogan? No. It was the candy lobbyists.
Candy?
Candy. Big Candy showed up and said, you know, if we had an extra hour, like, or, you know, if we had that time too, we could sell more candy for Halloween. So then daylight savings time, not that the time got longer, but they moved it further in the calendar to include Halloween as part of daylight saving so that we could go and buy more candy.
Wow.
So we observed this bullshit to support candy and golf courses and other shit that kill black people.
I don't think I need another hour to buy candy.
No, right? Like, you know I'm grown.
I have plenty.
And Walmart
of time.
Never closes. Like, I can eat all the candy I want.
Pandemic killed that.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah.
Ooh, moment of silence for a 24-hour service.
Damn.
Yeah.
Man, you really just blew my mind. And
yeah.
I really feel like John Deere has lied to me all my life. Along
yeah.
with the Des Moines public school system.
Right, because like, when you ask farmers, they're like, we don't like this shit.
Yeah.
Like, I don't want...
They're like, oh, this is dead. We got technology now. Like, y'all niggas ever heard of headlights? Like... you know?
I grow all my weed in the basement. What are you talking
about?
What
the fuck?
So,
Lies.
Yeah, that's your Madison lesson for the day.
Huh.
Blame candy, blame golf for making our time even more imaginary than it already is.
I appreciate
well, you
that.
Know, in the words of my Uncle Billy, cut the fucking sugar! Sorry. Love you, Uncle Billy.
But we're here to celebrate Charlie today.
That's
we're here
right.
to talk to our special guest. Tell us about what you've done, what you do, and your journey as an artist and as a performer.
Shit. Well, so I've lived in Des Moines my entire life.
Mm-hmm.
In school, I really got into... Like,
graduate from?
I graduated from East High School.
Mm. Woo!
Shout out East High Scarlet.
East. Yeah.
Going through some tragic things
right
now. School shooting.
Yep.
Serious business.
Yeah, a really messed up situation. And I mean, coming from that system, coming from that school, I know that the teachers, the students, it's an amazing environment in that school.
Yeah.
I don't think I am who I am today without that environment, because you go to some of the other local schools and it's very much like that, you know, West Side, mainly white people.
Yeah.
You go to North or Hoover it's kind of more of an eclectic mix, and that's the same thing with what we had at East.
Yeah.
You know, I feel like I had an opportunity to see kids that were well off, had parents that lived in, like, the nicer parts of Pleasant Hill,
mm-hmm.
and then we had people that, like, I literally multiple times gave a friend a ride to the shelter.
Yeah.
After school and after yeah. activities and stuff like that. So, like, I got to see a huge mix of that, and I think that's what helped kind of form the kind of person I am.
Shit.
So, like, East had a huge impact on me, and I know a lot of my friends have been really, like, just it shook us all to our core to think of something like that happening on our turf.
Absolutely.
You know.
Absolutely. You know, like, not to make this, like, overly serious or overly, like, political, but, you know, that is, like, the real, I think, sobering thing is, like, everyone thinks it won't happen to us. It won't happen in our school. Like, yeah. that's a them problem. You know, or they'll point to some other thing and say, like, that's the reason why this stuff happens or continues to keep happening. And like, the law of averages says it's going to be a matter of time before, it, you know, it comes knocking on your door.
Yeah.
You know, like, and so it breaks my heart that, like, we've still had there's all this inaction and apathy. Also, that lady on your sweatshirt has not said boo about this.
Not a word.
Which is also
not a single, really? Not a single yeah. statement. Yeah. Not a single thing.
Wow.
Yeah. The most she said, she went to the scene and said something to the cops. But then hightailed her ass out of there. Hasn't made a single statement since.
Well, probably a good thing we got those motherfuckers off the streets or some stupid shit like that.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, honestly, it's kind of crazy that, you know, it hit our doorstep. But in this time and age, with all the shit that we've got going and the way that our young teens are influenced with the negative ways of what we have to do in order to sort out their things or to deal with it. It seems it's so intense now with what we deal with in comparison to what they deal with, in comparison to what we dealt with. And it's fucking crazy.
Yeah, times are definitely different. Like, this is something that I never worried about now. You know, I get the emails like, oh, your kids, just so you know, we got an active shooter drill coming up at school next week. Like,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah, I don't even know how do I even act in an active shooter drill. You know? I don't have that training.
Exactly.
Well, yeah, like, we never had that
yeah.
when we were growing up, right? Like. Yeah. That wasn't really a thing.
Right. We had to go in the hallways and put a textbook over our head for a tornado.
Right.
You know, but that was, like, as bad as it got. So,
yeah. Oh, we have one of those ones.
Algebra will save you.
That's right. From the tornado.
From the tornado, yeah.
Actually, thank you, number.
At North, we had one.
Did you?
They locked us in. They locked us in our rooms.
Damn.
Wow.
Yeah, they, like, actually did, like, you know, school shooting drills or some shit like that where they actually, like, held us in our rooms.
Wow.
Like,
wow.
We are the generation that, like, had the wave of, like, officers being placed in our schools,
yep. yeah.
like, to help curb that kind of gang activity and violence or whatever yeah. the fuck they thought they were doing.
Well, the world kind of changed after 9/11, right?
Oh, absolutely.
And
Columbine even before.
Or that. Columbine, yeah. yeah. Like, between those, like, events, everything kind of shifted as far as how a lot of people approached the public education system. And unfortunately, it was white people that kind of benefited from feeling more comfortable about everything.
Mm.
And meanwhile, you bring in, you know, Des Moines police officers into these schools, and they just intimidate everybody. And yeah, they made friends. They were, you know, nice to some people, but it's not like they were equitable to every single student in that building.
Of course so, not.
Very
of
true.
Of course not.
Very true.
Yeah. Wow. How do
we
I?
Got really
how
off do topic. I?
Yeah. How do we segue out of?
Well, so I'll,
this
question.
We're talking
back.
About real shit in this Ooh. Neighborhood.
Yeah. Let me bring it back. So I went to East, and because I wasn't very well, like, my parents were very well off. My dad was unemployed for a good portion of my childhood and everything. My mom had to eventually quit her job because of health reasons, so we struggled. I kind of leaned into choirs and theater in order to kind of have some way to express myself.
Yeah.
'Cause I'm not much of an artist. I'm not much of, you know, I don't have other outlets.
Sure.
So I really leaned into those things between, like, school plays and then starting to do some community stuff. Then I noticed that you could start getting paid for some of that stuff. So I started leaning a little more heavily into that.
That's right. That's right.
But then, I mean, I've lived in Des Moines, with the exception of a few little windows, my entire life. I've been performing in local stages around here for 20 some years. Wow. At this point,
dude, let's just give you a round of applause. Hanging in anything for 20 years, that is
impressive.
Yeah, that is a feat all of its
impressive.
Own. Like, my hip don't even work right for, right. for 20 years. You know what I'm saying? Like, get out of town. So yeah, let's talk about some of those experiences as a 20-year vet in the creative scene.
I mean, so when you're first starting out, and this, you know, may apply to some people listening to this, but it's kind of intimidating because it seems like a cult of culture in a way, you know? You got to find the right crowd that you want to hang out with, and that goes for any type of art, right?
Right.
In the music scene, you got to know the right people, and then you have opportunities, and maybe they're not even the greatest opportunities, or maybe they're in really shitty dive bars or things like that.
True facts.
Yeah.
You know? In the theater scene, it's kind of that same way, really, because you go into an institution like the Des Moines Playhouse, right? And it's a huge building. It's really intimidating. It's really scary when you don't know anybody. You don't know what you're doing.
Let's give it some context. Let's give the Des Moines Playhouse their appropriate props. You know, they're the oldest community theater. What is it, west of the Mississippi?
It's 100 and I think 102, 103 years now.
Yeah, so you're talking about long-term legacy kind of...
The oldest community theater in, I think, the country now.
Yeah, and Cloris Leachman cut her teeth there, which is like kind of the big claim to fame. Shout out Cloris Leachman.
Yeah, she went to Roosevelt.
Yeah, went to Roosevelt High School, eh? we Rough Riders too, you know.
I get props.
We gave it to Easton and North a little bit. We gotta give it a little to the Roosevelt fam too. We all neighbors here, you know.
Yeah, we are all neighbors here.
Neighbors. So yeah, you're right. There is an intimidation factor when you're walking into something that has over a century of history and baggage too.
Yeah, there have been like theater companies that have come and gone since I've been performing, and thankfully in the last like 5-10 years, the culture and the community has kind of grown to offer more opportunities.
Mm-hmm.
Right. As a white man, it's been easy for me to walk into any theater institution and automatically have kind of my pick. Right.
Sure.
Especially when I was starting out, you know, I kind of grew up from being in the ensemble and just kind of background player to having all these lead role opportunities and really just having an opportunity to be in the spotlight.
Hmm.
But I can't tell you, and I know you guys know this, but how many people don't have that opportunity.
Hmm.
And I've been kind of a voice in the background kind of fighting against that for a long time.
Yeah. No, I know you have. We've had a lot of caffeinated and drunk conversations about but that actually brings to my first question. Do you think, especially after the last 2 years, that any real efforts or any real growth has happened on the side of like creating more of that kind of equity and inclusion? Not to hit those three letters because I'm so tired of those three letters, but like, is it actually happening or is it still lip service?
No, it's all lip service.
Breaks my heart.
With all due respect, there are organizations like Pyramid Theater
mm-hmm.
Company.
Mm-hmm. Shout out Pyramid.
Yeah.
Gateway Dance Theater. Some of these other organizations that really are growing themselves out to offer opportunities. Even the Garden has theater opportunities where they embrace the whole perspective of you're welcome here.
Mm, sure. Mm.
Regardless of who you are, what you look like.
Absolutely. Nicholas and Cataclysmic. It's really interesting. If you go into our archives and go back to one of our Drinks with Friends episodes, mm-hmm. there's an episode about Black Rocky, Black Rocky Horror Picture Show, where they actually cast a black lead into that role of being the ideal man, which is, I think, really fascinating in the subtext of what that really kind of means, right?
Yeah.
But also, like...
Dano's interested in this part now.
No, it just brought back a funny-ass memory to me about being in musicals. I did 2 musicals my whole time that I've ever done stuff with, like, around theater.
Yeah.
And so the first one I did was Grease, and it was my senior year in high school, and I wanted to be Danny Zuko.
Yeah.
Hell yeah, Danny Zuko.
Yeah, yeah.
But instead I was Roger, King of the Mooners.
That's not Danny Zuko at all.
No. In the sense of what happened was they didn't really have the people that they could have had that could have made the person Danny Zuko be the absolute thing. Like, he didn't have really the vocal work or the stretch to do it. So to bring me in, they're like, we want you to sing all the songs. You can sing all the songs. Whatever songs you want, you can sing all the songs. So it's like, all right, cool, I guess I'll do that.
And what?
So instead of, you know, Sandy leaving Danny at the drive-in movie and him singing alone at the drive-in movie, it was 3 black kids that got up on the backstage in the back and they're like harmonizing He's All Alone at the drive-in movie. But it was dope.
Which actually sounds like a better version of Grease.
Yeah, to be completely honest. It made it like so much better because like then you get the ask like, wait, 3 black dudes in the back singing Alone at the drive-in movie. Like, oh man, that's crazy. And then the other one I did West Side Story, but that was weird.
Wait, hold on. Let's not forget Sound of Progress, my guy.
Yeah, I did do Sound of Progress. That's like
you're a featured dude. What
and
are you
I
talking
mean,
about?
That's how I got to meet Charlie. Honestly.
That's what I'm saying.
That's crazy.
Art brings us together.
Art brings us together.
I'm saying.
It really does.
But yeah, what was great about what Cataclysmic has been doing is that, like, it also represents the notion of, like, what does queer theater look like, when it's always been kind of like this, like, yeah, like wink and nudge of, like, you know, theater.
Right.
But it's like, no, yeah, what happens when you actually have, like, queerness on the front of, yeah, of that conversation and actually embraces, like, whatever your identity might be to create a truly inclusive space of, like, we're not checking boxes.
Yeah.
But we also happen to have, like, cater to a particularly gay audience, or gay-friendly audience.
Yeah,
which also then allows people to live in their truth and be the performers they want to be, but also allows, like, a different lens to, like, take some of those classic works, mm-hmm, and just have a different perspective on them. Just like with, you know, that Grease thing, it's like, yeah, sometimes you're in a creative spot, you need to, like, fix it.
Exactly.
Or sometimes you just have a different vision to say, like, what if this was blacker or gayer or slightly more, like, Latino or whatever. Yeah. You know what I mean? It's,
I mean,
like, adding those flavors
on the
to
Wiz
this.
For years.
Like, yo, yeah, like, talk, like, about
like,
it.
Like,
yeah.
Like, at work, I'm just going through and I'm talking to people, and it's like, wait, y'all never heard of the Wiz? And I'm like, no. And then I have people arguing with me, like, that doesn't even sound like something that should be that big. I'm like, and I'm listing the people who were in it. I'm like, this was huge at the time.
Michael,
what are you
Jackson
talking about?
Like, right.
Like, if you don't know about the Wiz, get your life together. And so I've been going around and asking basically all of the white people at my job, like, hey, shit about the Wiz. Like,
right. Luther Vandross is in the movie,
yeah,
as a singer. Just,
yeah,
a background. Just a background.
How many of them said, well, I watched the NBC Live.
None. Actually, I had more people that were just like, I never heard of it. And then I had a couple who were like, oh, yeah. Like, there's a few down. Shout out, Maren. I love the Wiz. Like, that's why you're in HR. You can get along with everything.
That does feel like an HR answer.
Right.
Whatever you love. Yes, I've heard of that.
I love the Wiz. Yeah. You know, education. It's our
is
job,
that
right?
Short for the Wizard?
The Wizard. Not the Grand Wizard.
okay. Table pitch.
The Wicked Witch of the Midwest.
There it is. There it is. It writes itself.
Yep, there you go. We're out here. That's what I'm saying. I needed a follow-up, and now I got it.
House of the Shoes
and
Rations. House of the
Rations. House of the Rations.
So, to speak on the audition process.
Yeah.
Getting into some of these spaces. What is your experience been? Do you have any, like, tips or anything you'd like to share about that? Like,
so,
what's that process?
Every place does a little bit differently, right? If we're talking about theater, they tend to have a specific daytime that you go in, right?
Yeah.
If it's a musical, you have to prepare, like, 16 bars of music, something like a half minute to a minute of song, right?
Yeah.
Just to show your range. And my biggest advice that I always give people who are starting out as auditioners, just find a song that you like. Like, it doesn't matter if the song is specific to the character that you want. It's not specific to the genre. And a lot of times, you're not even supposed to sing from the show itself, right?
Yo, that's a rookie mistake. People start looking at the song list, and they're like, oh, I'm going to do that banger. Like, I'm going to do the big title number.
It kind of, you shoot yourself in the foot, because then they know exactly what they're going to get.
Mm. Yeah.
Even if you haven't, like, polished it, worked on it, anything like that. So what I tend to tell people is just find a song that you like, go in and sing it. If they need to hear more, they'll ask you to sing more. But
yep.
I would rather have them ask me to hear more than for them to automatically think they know everything they need.
That's a pro tip right there.
That, you know? Yo.
And I will tend to find something that sounds similar to the part that I want, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if there is a character that has, like, a really silly, fun number, I'll find something similar to that in a different, you know, musical or even just a regular song.
Yeah.
Like, you don't have to do musical theater songs to audition for musical theater. Do a popular song. Who the hell cares?
I sang the Beatles at my first audition. I sure did. I was literally like, what song do you have prepared? I said, I don't know. What would you like to hear? And they were like, that's not how this works. I said, I know some Beatles. You like the Beatles?
Yeah.
They're like, do you have music? I said, no, you're going to get an a cappella. And they hired your boy. So, I mean, like,
I mean, it worked out.
It's, nice. I think that authenticity actually does speak volumes of just, like,
absolutely.
They want to see
who
you are.
Yeah. You are. Exactly.
Yeah.
And they get to kind of understand the kind of person they're going to work with. Because sometimes theater specifically is not about a person's talent level. It's how much the director wants to work with you.
Yo, my man's giving out the cheat codes today.
Gems right here. So all you theater people know right now, I will be auditioning to end I Am Telling You at every audition.
Go ahead, Effie.
If you did that, if you walked into an audition room and you sang And I Am Telling You, every single person in that room stands up, starts clapping their asses off because they're loving it the whole time. It's because true. It's so different. And that's exactly what I'm talking about. Like, if you show your personality and who you are, they love that shit.
They figure out where it fits. I mean, really, that's what it is. It's like, in my experience, is like, it's part of it is like an ego thing of like realizing sometimes not every role is meant for you. And that's not, like, the vision is not about your talent or your worth.
That's
or
that one kind of the hardest thing.
It's just like, oh, this is the recipe of what I was trying to make. And sometimes you just don't.
You're not that secret ingredient.
Yeah. You don't need coriander for everything. You know what I mean? Like, it is what it is, right?
Any self-respecting director or casting director, you know, whoever is in that room, does not want to see you fail. Mm. Yeah. They want to see you do well because they want to cast the people that are the best, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or the best for that fit, and exactly like you were saying. Now, what I will say to kind of like connect it back a little bit is sometimes people go into those auditions, directors, whatever, they already have a vision of what they want, and sometimes they even know exactly who they want, but they still have to audition for the show,
yeah.
Right? I've been fortunate enough that sometimes I haven't had to even audition. I just get a call asking me to play a role.
Yeah.
In a lot of respects, that's Singing in the Rain.
Yeah.
I didn't really audition for it because originally I was getting done with Adora's Line, a show we were doing right for the pandemic.
That's right.
And I wasn't ready to jump into another show.
Wait, shout out. My man played Joe Biden.
Hey.
I am convinced. I am convinced that this man's tap dancing got Joe elected. Because before, when we were doing the show, Joe was like the kind of the butt of the jokes of like there's no way Joe Biden's gonna be the guy, which made it kind of funny. It was like Joe was like so desperate. The way Charlie had brought this character to life was like he was that old man of like just give me one more chance. I'll suck your dick for a vote type of energy, right? And my man did a whole. Like 7 to 9 minute dance number.
Song and dance.
A whole literal song and dance. There were mirrors. I mean, my man was hitting all the moves with the jazz hands, and there goes my hat. Wow. Like it was epic. And then, like, after the show closed, it was like, and all of a sudden Joe Biden started gaining, and it was like, yo, are your feet magical, my guy? Because, like, nobody was talking about Joe Biden. Charlie gets out there and dances his ass. Everyone's like, you know, Joe Biden's not that bad. I think he might be our president.
No matter who.
It was amazing.
Yeah.
Another story. We went to, after a show, after one of those shows. Now, keep in mind. 7 to 9 minutes of that kind of dancing, like that's pretty intense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And my man's was recovering from the flu, so he was like Jordan flu game style.
Damn.
Like ice
with the flu.
Yeah, man. Ice baths. like just let me get out there and just dance. I'll hang in the back until it's time to dance.
Yeah.
Let me just. And so we did like a fundraiser afterwards because one of our members of the theater community, Josh Jepson. You remember Josh?
I do.
Growing up together. Shout out Josh and his family. They were going through some medical stuff.
Yeah.
And so we did a fundraiser, because it takes a community, takes a village. And we auctioned off the dance one more time.
We had a double header.
Yeah, we had a double header that day. So we're already too deep.
Wow. And I'm tired.
So now we're at the bar, drunk. Just like we're sitting on stage, just kind of like we are now, just singing the songs, being like, "Oh, this is your song, you sing it."
Yeah.
And they're like, "We need to raise some more money." All right, let's pass the hat, and if we can get X amount of dollars, Charlie will do the dance in its entirety right now. And Charlie's like,
"What, you guys?"
Yo, and I was like, "If I'm gonna do this, we gotta set a real like dollar amount.
Like,
it was real money. $800 had to be raised that night, like in cash, basically.
In the moment, like you have $800 to raise right now to make this man dance. Your move." And they that showed up.
In 5 minutes, we got that money. And I was like, fuck.
Yeah, so we're all kind of laughing, like, oh, what a great idea. We're going to raise some extra money, like $800. We'll probably not get there, but we'll probably, you know, whatever.
Three cocktails deep at that
point. And we're thinking, like, it'll take some time. In 5 minutes, they come back, and they're like, Charlie, you're going to get that dance ready. And he's like, what?
Wait a minute.
I need more whiskey if we're going to do this. Yeah, right? And then he goes out and kills it. like tired, drunk. This man went in and, like, gave the Joeyest Biden performance I ever seen in my life. If Joe could bring half the energy, maybe these gas prices wouldn't be the way they are.
Oh, Lord.
I got robbed. He just came to dance for y'all. That's it.
My man. So good. Oh. Singing in the Rain. So you mentioned Singing in the Rain. Yeah. Another dance-heavy show. How is that treating you?
You know what? It's been a roller coaster, right? Because we ran through the entire rehearsal process. We got through our second show. And after that second show, they closed our show because of the pandemic.
Right.
And we were supposed to have 18 shows. So we got 2 out of the 18. And originally it was, you know, we're just going to close down for a few weeks. We'll come back. Just like everybody, you know, thought this will go away after a couple weeks, whatever.
We're responsible.
Uh-huh.
We can handle this.
And then
meet the moment.
And then we got an email eventually just basically saying,
get the fuck out of here.
Yeah. And then we got an email basically just saying, you know, the show is done. We're closing the show. It's not coming back. Bring your scripts in. We're done. So especially like because we were all dealing with the mental health of like a pandemic and everything else going on, to also lose everything that we had just worked on and not have the performance opportunities, it was a real mind trip, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So then fast forward back in September, I got a call from Katie Merriman, the artistic director, saying, hey, we're bringing Singing the Rain back. And I'm not going to lie, I didn't answer whether I was coming back or not.
Yeah.
Just because it's like, I closed that chapter.
Right. Dealt with a lot. Are you still the performer you were 2 years ago?
Is my body still capable?
That's a real question. Like, yeah, like, all right, cool, you want to do this 2 years later, but like, am I the same person?
Yeah. And I was chatting with some of the other leads, and all the leads came back.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of our ensemble members, amazing people, but they were Drake kids that graduated and moved away. Right.
Right.
Wow.
Right.
So we had to basically recast 75% of the show.
Yeah. So it's basically a new
Which
show.
Is basically a whole new show.
Right, yeah. Right.
But here's the crazy thing, right? The very first week we have a dance rehearsal. We're doing one of the big tap numbers called Good Morning. And this is, if you've ever seen Singing in the Rain.
Yeah.
Good morning.
Yeah, if you've ever seen Singing in the Rain, this is like an iconic musical number.
Right.
Huge tap dance number and everything. And I'm not a tap dancer. Like, I can move how people tell me to move. If you put me on a dance floor, I look like the white guy I am.
Okay. Okay. This is your box. Stay
this
in
is
your
my box.
Box.
Yeah.
1, 2, 1.
But so we
throw a little flavor in it.
Turn.
Spin.
And kick.
We start walking through the number, and we're just kind of like, okay, we kind of remember these things. We learned up to the dance break. We stopped. We're just like, you know what? Let's just play the music. Let's see how far we can get. We danced the whole number.
Oh.
We hadn't touched it in 2 years, but muscle memory kind of kicked in, and we were able to get through the whole thing.
Yeah.
I'm telling you.
That's a mind fuck right there.
Yeah.
You know? But that's kind of what theater does in a way, right? Your body kind of takes the time to learn and process all these different things between the lines, the choreography, the emotions, everything that's kind of mixed in with that. And it kind of becomes a part of you, right? Mm-hmm. Like if I told you to get a microphone and start singing Starship to Mars.
Oh, ready.
You haven't sang it right live in a while.
Very
at this point, right?
Yeah.
You put that microphone in front of you, that music hits,
yeah.
You're right back there.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, it might take a minute to kind of warm back up and everything.
But once in the zone.
But,
yeah.
Like, Dano, I could do the exact same thing with you. Anything from your album, I could ask you to just start singing it right now. Maybe at the beginning, it'd take a minute.
Yeah.
But you find your footing.
Kick right back in. Yeah. Right?
Yeah.
So So for me, that's kind of like this.
You know that shit slap, bro. Hey.
My dude.
For me, it's kind of that powerful thing that art has where your mind, your body, your heart take over, and you're able to just kind of continue this thing that you created regardless of the amount of time that's kind of passed, right?
Yeah.
So that's what Singing in the Rain has been like this whole process. We're now going into Like, we open in 2 weeks. Fuck my life.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I can't tell you how excited I am to get in front of an audience. Nice. I can't tell you how excited I am with this new cast to present this show, because it's the same show, but a new cast, including Madison.
Hey.
It's going to be amazing. Hey.
Give me a little ting on that. Hey, my man. Wow. I'm glad to be a part of the team. You know, it's actually really funny. Like, at this point in my life and my career, I'm just like the feature guy. Like, I show up for like a thing, and then I'm just gone. Yeah, like just one. Like, and that was literally the situation. I called up Katie Merriman. I was like, "Do you need a guy for a thing?" And she was like, "Yeah." And I was like, "Okay, I'll do it." She's like, "You need to come audition." I said, "Okay."
Okay. Do you know who I am?
But the conversation has been really fascinating around this, even this feature role. Like, I'm on for one song.
Nice.
And but one thing that was really important to me on the point of, like, equity is that, like, I wanted to be a black performer in this world. I didn't want to be, like, whatever that vision originally might have been. Like, I'm not that person.
Yeah. Yeah.
Don't hold me to that standard. In fact, like, let's completely redesign what this is. And because it's such a small role, it's easy to overlook those details. You know what I mean? Like, you go, oh, it's one song. Who cares? Yeah. But that's exactly it. It's only one song. Yeah. So now I can care about it and give that one song the love that it needs.
Exactly.
So it isn't a throwaway moment, that it actually, like, lives in this ecosystem.
Yeah.
And so, you know, talking with, like, the music director, the costumer, and getting them on board with this vision of, like, this character is black now. Lean in.
Yeah.
You know, like, there were black performers in the 20s,
yeah.
Iconic ones, mm-hmm. You know, and so I referenced Duke Ellington and Cab Calloway and said, they're kings.
Facts.
In fact, like, of that era, who of the white musician variety is, like, in the forefront of your mind of who came out of that same era that has that same kind of cultural relevancy today, 100 years later? Tell me. And they were like, that's a really good point. I said, I know. But they were also willing to, like, meet me halfway and say, like, okay, cool. Like, let's redesign this character now that we have Madison in this role, not to just make him a fill-in for what we thought it was going to be before and make him this, you know, kind of white bread, you know, blonde-haired tenor, you know. You know, none of that kind of shit. Like, we're not doing that, you know? Like, I'm not that performer. Don't ask me to be that performer. That way we're having something that's authentic and hopefully cool.
Yeah.
That's like, oh, this feels real and feels authentic. So even when you're seeing the thing, you're like, okay, cool. Like, and for those listeners who are not familiar with Singing in the Rain, it's a very meta kind of story where it's like a movie. It was originally a movie about making movies, about the silent era, moving into the talking film, like, technology and growth and whatever.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, like, that is real history.
Yeah.
The jazz singer is real. They reference that movie and that piece of shit, you know? sorry. It's blackface, dude. I can't do it.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Like, we'll paint this white guy black, and that's the movie.
Yeah.
What else? No, that's the movie. Everyone hates him for it. Okay? That's the movie.
It's real life.
Right. He sings like a Negro.
That is the first big talking picture.
Right, yeah. Right. And so...
The first.
Welcome to Hollywood.
Welcome to the talkies.
Right. And, you know, and that's the interesting. So talking with the costumer, shout out to Angie, she does her research, and she was telling me that, like, in the silent era, that there was more representation.
Yes.
Because it was very accessible as an art form.
Mm.
So, like, you had women... And what's the phrase that's popular now? People of color that were, like, you know, like, out doing the work, just making their art. But when talking film comes in, it becomes much more expensive. So now they can't procure the loans to get the equipment to stay with the conversation. So just to, again, the system games diversity out of the picture for any handful of reasons, right?
Yeah.
And so then you start thinking about that, and you're like, man, all that shit we don't ever talk about. We don't talk about the women who are making silent films. We don't even think that women made silent films because we don't talk about that stuff, you know? And so there is that, like, blatant erasure that we're now able to actually approach and authentically bring life to some of those unspoken parts of history.
Mm.
And it's not inaccurate. It's not like, oh, they put some black people in because they're trying to make black people... relevant, and they're trying to be cool, so they got some black
which
people.
Is the biggest internet argument for any time there are brown people inserted into any kind of movie,
you know, like, it is a pretty tight cast, and there are multiple black actors involved.
That's dope.
Of varying ranges, you know? And yeah. So there isn't the tokenism thing, which I was also, frankly, a little worried about. You know, it's like, okay, cool, you got me. Who else is going to be there? Yeah. You know?
How many?
Right.
How many?
And as I'm watching the process, and it's like, cool. Like, you're actually seeing representation in ways that actually matter. Like, oh, that character is a director. There's a black director and a black starlet. And there's, like, all these, like, this really rich ecosystem of interesting characters to even just look at. Mm-hmm. So even if you're sitting there for a couple of hours for the tap dancing, and yes, there is rain on stage. I saw that, and it looked beautiful. Like,
first three rows is gonna get wet.
Fucking Gallagher show. They got
a tarp. Get your tarp out, right. Here's your poncho. It's like it's a really interesting project, and hopefully, maybe speaking for myself, it's like hopefully we can see more of that energy where there's actual thoughtfulness about what we're actually producing, and have some sensitivity and not just checking off.
Well, I think it's cool to even see that happening in Des Moines.
Yeah, facts.
Of all places.
A diversifying of the art in Des Moines. It's a cool thing to see, and props to y'all for being a part of it. So now, Charlie, you've also done stuff on the other side of the stage too, right? So, tell me about it from that end. Like,
so, theater was really kind of that area where I blossomed and became, you know, more of an outward person. Because otherwise, I'm sitting at home, kind of, you know, doing my own thing.
Yeah,
I'm kind of to myself normally, but. I got to a certain point where, you know, with community theater, especially in Des Moines, there's not really a lot of paid opportunities, right? You're kind of using months of your time per project.
Yeah.
And at the end of the day, you're performing and then you go home. And even sometimes you're actually investing money, right, to get the shoes that you need or to have things that you need in order to succeed, whether it's a mic belt or special socks or special, you know, something like that to help you get through a performance. When we did Doris Line, I had to buy my own pants.
Yeah. They couldn't get his pants right.
Because they couldn't get it right. So I was like, fuck it, I'll do it myself.
I got my own pants.
So actually, my wife, Megan, actually was telling me that, like, you should really consider, you know, doing some commercials or doing some voiceover work, doing some stuff like that. And I hadn't really given a lot of thought. I have a lot of friends that do that kind of stuff, but I was like, I'll give it a shot. Let's just check it out, whatever. Met with one of the local agencies, just kind of told him, yeah, I do a lot of community theater, but I'd like to make some money.
Yeah.
Like, be kind of nice, right? But then since then, I've done multiple, like, just video auditions, submitted them for different things. I've gone into places to do radio interviews. I've done all these different things. And I've booked several, like, training videos, commercials, ad camp. Like, I did an Iowa Lottery commercial.
I remember.
I'm currently in, like, a Service Legends commercial.
Yeah, I tell you, y'all know the thing, like, they'd, like, chilling and got the beard, and you're like, oh, yeah. I'm so cold.
So, no joke about this. That was December 2020. That was, like, high of the pandemic when I am drinking a ridiculous amount. I'm baking bread every day. I'm eating my weight in lard. Like, I'm having a bad fucking time.
Double butter!
double butter. Throwback right there. And then they're just like, yeah, so we're going to do a bunch of, like, shots of you waking up. Every single time I see that commercial, that is the heaviest I have ever been in my fucking life. My ass is rolling out like I'm an egg.
But they found Charles.
They're just like, yeah, all you have to do is sit up. And I'm like, Chuck. They're just like, sit up in that bed. And I'm like, bitch, I haven't done a sit-up in years. Like, my hands have to help push me up. I can't do this for an hour straight.
Yeah.
But it's been really fun to just, you know, be able to try something. It doesn't work, try it again. Try something again, you know. Whereas with theater, it's like what you get in that moment, that live second, it's it.
Yeah.
You go through the show, you fuck something up, that's part of the show now.
Yeah.
At least with, like, video or movies or commercials, things like that, you can do multiple takes and give them different options and they can choose the one they want.
Right.
So it's kind of fun to kind of improvise in between moments, because a lot of times you're not given the specifics. It's you have the line and they tell you how to move your body, but otherwise your facial expression, things like that, you're kind of making it up, right?
Mm-hmm.
The biggest thing that I would say for anybody that's interested in doing, like, commercial work, things like that, is check out one of the local agencies. They're the easiest ones to kind of connect you immediately with.
Drop the names.
I'm with Peak Agency. Steve Myers is really great because he doesn't make money if you don't make money. So he doesn't push people into things that they don't want to do. He doesn't send you audition notices that you'll never be considered for. He filters them out to make sure that's something that works for you.
Yeah.
I can tell you there are probably hundreds of people that are represented by Peak Agency, quote unquote, that haven't done shit in years.
Right. Yeah.
He'll send me all kinds of projects where it's just like, okay, there's this one, it's 2 days of filming, but you have to drive to Kansas City on these dates. Well, I'm not available, so I'm not going.
Yeah, done.
You know, things like that.
Easy peasy.
And like the other side of it, right, is like voiceover work. There are a couple local studios like the Sound Garage that they will have clients that come in and say, you know, we need a 30-second radio spot. Or we want to have a little voiceover for a training video or something like that, right? They have the script, and they just want to hear different voices doing it.
Bro, it's time to put that silky baritone to work.
Hello. I think you're right.
Hello.
You're right. I need to make that call.
Hello. Yeah. Yeah.
And with voiceover work, it's a really similar to like commercial work, right? Sure. You're like, you just have the script, you have a microphone, and you're just trying all these different ways of doing it. Like, you want to be really clear in your diction and how you present things. Unfortunately, it means you probably have to use a white voice. Yeah.
I've got one of those.
But, you know, it depends on the client.
Thanks to Booty Grease, I don't have hemorrhoids anymore. Thanks, Booty Grease.
Just let yourself go.
This smells just like the activator my grandma used to use. That's weird. Thanks, Booty Grease.
Brings back memories of plastic couches.
I mean, the hardest part for anyone to get into those worlds is the network, right? Yeah. Once you know somebody, it can grow from there. I think the way that I've always tried to approach it and how I like tell other people to try is just like with theater, be yourself. Mm-hmm. Don't try to go in there and pretend to be somebody else, because the second they realize you're not that person, they'll know.
Yeah.
You know,
how can I trust you?
Right.
Exactly.
A very simple thing that then turns into a big thing.
Yeah, and when I'm trying to think of like who I want to work with, if I'm part of the conversation about casting or things like that, I'm absolutely thinking of the real person and not the person they can fake be. I want to know that that person is going to be there on time, that they're going to like know their shit or be prepared to learn their shit, that they're reliable, they communicate. You got to be all those like professional things that everybody always talks about, because otherwise you're burning bridges and you're ruining your own opportunities.
Right. Yeah.
And it's easier for people, obviously, that have a mode of transportation, that have the ability to take time off work to do things sometimes, because it might be during a work day.
Yeah.
And that's really tough for a lot of people, unfortunately. So it absolutely is the kind of thing where if you have your own full-time job, you don't have reliable transportation, you kind of have to pick and choose your opportunities, right? It's unfortunate, the reality. But there are plenty of people in town that will overlook those kinds of challenges and help you if you put in the time and effort despite those challenges.
Sure.
Nobody wants to look stupid is what it comes down to. And I'm saying, like, don't make me look dumb and I'll help you out.
Yeah, right?
As much as I can. But the minute you make me look like an idiot, then I'm done.
Yeah.
Snip. I mean, I want to say half of the commercial work that I've done has been with one guy.
Yeah.
One guy who really liked me the first shoot.
Mm-hmm.
And just kept calling me and kept using me for things. And sometimes it's as stupid as I'm putting on a knight costume and pretending that I'm letting in the Trojan horse. Or I'm laying up in bed multiple times. I start out with a giant beard and I'm trimming it off throughout as the day goes on. And they like put it in reverse to make it seem like I'm growing a beard.
Yeah.
But like these really ridiculous spots, I was just offered one last week for a TikTok for Hy-Vee, which that was... I'd rather not work at that organization. But it was the kind of thing where I said, I don't know that I can take time off of work right now. Like, I'm really busy with that. He was working with me to try to make it work. And at the last minute, I had to pull out. I didn't have an option or anything.
Plug him strong.
But he's not going to hold that against me, because I was communicating with him. I was being very upfront and just saying, I have to run this by some people. I have to get approval, whatever. And I think what some people run into is that they don't know to communicate that way or to just be honest with people, they tend to want to hide it and just say, yeah, I got to find out. Let me know.
Yeah.
Or, you know, I'll let you know as soon as I know. But they don't give any specifics. They don't, you know, be honest with somebody.
Yeah.
And as an artistic person that sometimes is involved in those, like, casting decisions or, you know, deciding who I want to reach out to offer an opportunity, if I know someone is just constantly ghosting me, not responding, not communicating, they're not showing up on time, and it's not for a reason, it's just, oh, yeah, I just went through the McDonald's drive-thru.
I need that McGriddle at my Starbucks.
If you were hungry, just tell me you were hungry.
Yeah.
Don't show up late and expect me to be cool with it.
Yeah.
You know, and don't show up and start making shit up because you think that you're funnier than the way that it's written or anything like that. Like, absolutely bring your personality to it. But yeah, it's being reliable and being open, honest with people, and just being true to yourself.
Mm. Yo, that professionalism is real. Like, I got a shit list of, like, people I just do not mess with, you know, like, just because it's like they are not trustworthy in those spaces, and it's not even about being petty. It's like sometimes it's like safety is on the line. You know, I've shared this story a few times with y'all, but I'll share it for our listeners, our new friends who are joining in, and all of our neighbors who have been rocking with us since episode one.
All the neighbors,
but like, you know, when I did a show, and there was some kind of fight choreography going on. And fight choreography is real serious, you know, like where you go and where this is and the placement of the thing and the blocking, all of these things are so important because of the safety of all the actors, not just those who are fighting, but everybody else who's in that scene, who's sharing that space. And trust and believe, I like to lay my shit in, you know what I mean? Like, let's make it real. If you're going to swing, like, put your back into it. Yeah. I'll duck. That's the choreography. I know my step. Lean into yours. So that's cool. We're able to really build something that has a dynamic. But if you have someone who's unprofessional who changes that while it's happening and no one knows, now all of a sudden you've put all these people in jeopardy because, like, I know I'm supposed to step to the left, pivot, duck, spin, and exit or whatever, right? Like, that's my track. If you're now in my track, now I'm in danger because I've got this other person behind me who's literally swinging a heavy object at my head. You know what I'm saying? So, like, my actual safety is now at risk. Their safety is at risk. And so is everyone else's. Is now we've got to try to improvise a fight scene. A major no-no.
So you
because
have to
somebody, right? Somebody's ego thought, let me improv some shit and change the rules because I'm having a moment.
Yeah.
Like,
say Power Rangers, bro.
Right.
Yeah.
Yo, if you want a moment, go download TikTok, bitch. Like, you can spotlight yourself all day, but this ain't the space.
And think of it this way, right? You had that bad experience.
Yeah.
You tell everybody you know, I had this bad experience. Don't work with this person.
Everybody I know, I had this bad experience.
Yeah, right?
Don't do it.
Everybody they know finds out he had this bad experience. This happened, that situation. Everybody in that network all of a sudden has a bad perspective of that individual.
Yeah.
And that just grows and grows and grows.
It's hard to get a reputation back sometimes.
It really is.
And even if it was just and that's exactly it, the professionalism. If it was a momentary lapse, we could have talked it out.
Yeah.
And been like, oh, yeah.
We're human.
You made a mistake. Mistakes happen.
Yeah.
Cool. Don't let it fucking happen again. You know? But when you, like, with your whole chest, you make a decision, you think that's the right call to make, and you don't consider anybody else or even apologize for putting other people in danger for your own ego.
Yeah.
Like, we actually have some real problems.
Yeah.
You know, like, we couldn't talk it out. Like, oh, it's about you. Got it. And nobody else. Fuck everybody else. Got it. That's the performer you are. Got it. Got it, got it, got
and
it.
And now
got
I
it,
know.
Got it. And right, and now I know. Yeah. And knowing is half the battle.
G.I. Joe.
Thank you. So, I've always been curious about this, and I've never had a chance to really ask you formally, but, like, where do you get your inspiration from? You know, like, we as artists, we always draw from, like, other things until we can kind of create our own craft.
Yeah.
From our inspiration, from our experiences and those kinds of things. But, like, what drives that piece of your creativity? I've never known. Like, where do you pull that stuff from?
You know, my family was the kind of situation, like I was mentioning before, where my parents weren't very well off. So we didn't have an opportunity to travel or do a lot of these things.
Yeah.
But, you know, we did have. We had a TV. We had a lot of classic movies.
Yeah.
Right? We had whatever was on, on cable. We had whatever was on VHS. Yeah. We had like things that were easy to get at the library, things like that, right? Mm-hmm. So I kind of was raised on classic movies, classic music. My dad was a huge John Wayne and Elvis fan.
Okay.
My mom was a big musical person, and I just kind of like got inspiration from watching like the Golden Age stuff, which as a white person feels really weird to say it that way, but
hey, but it is what it is.
It is what it is. You know,
can't change the past,
quote unquote. but so as I started to perform and kind of grow, I started being more aware of the fact that, like, you know, this shit that they did in the 1950s isn't me. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not actually indicative of my perspective on the world. It doesn't represent my friends, mm-hmm. the people that I spend all my time with and everything. So I started to kind of challenge that perspective. I've been going to New York and seeing shows.
Yeah.
I've been trying to kind of see other opportunities, because around here it feels like it doesn't get the people don't get the representation that they deserve.
Mm.
You mainly see a lot of white faces on stage, and with all due respect, Iowa is more than 75% white.
Right.
But that doesn't mean that there isn't a population of people that fit into the other category.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And it's very unfortunate that rather than look at local art, especially theater, and thinking of it from the perspective of how can we just shift this just slightly, like you were talking about with Singing in the Rain, not a lot of people take that approach.
Right.
It's whatever I can do, and if a black person plays that role, if a brown person plays that role, if a Mexican plays that role, whatever the person is, cool. I can check that box and say there's diversity in this cast, right. But I'm not actually going to do anything with that.
Right.
See, I think it really comes down to people not seeing the big picture. And when I say not seeing the big picture, it's not seeing a problem. Like, the people who are doing that and are wanting to check that box feel like they're doing their due diligence and that everything's yep. okay, and that they don't actually want to see a change happen in the environment that we're living in, like the status quo.
Absolutely.
Whereas if you were to go in and put in this legwork and actually make these efforts to make things more equitable for people, you would see some of this population shift happening. Like,
yeah.
You would see more people of color, like younger people, things like that, moving into the space, because they're going to see it as a place where they can thrive.
Absolutely.
Rather than some place where they can just go and be that guy. And I think, you know, like when you're young and starting out, it might be cool to be that guy, but as you grow and you want to see real opportunities for other people, like, that's not enough anymore.
Yeah, it doesn't fill you up being that guy. You know, and like I've had tons of conversations about colorblind versus color conscious casting. Mm-hmm. You know, and there are those people who are like, yeah, I don't want to see color, I just want to see talent. And it feels like it comes from a good place, but it doesn't, you know, because it has to take all of those things like culture and history and those dynamics into account to create the fantasy world that we're living in.
Yes.
And but it's not to say there aren't spaces that colorblind casting does work. Like, if you remember, let's go back to high school, we played barnyard animals in a show.
Mm-hmm.
That has nothing to do with culture or color or anything. You can't, that can be colorblind, because like, the fuck, what the fuck ethnicity is a duck? Mm-hmm. Or in your case, a bullfrog.
Beast of a bullfrog, too.
I'm saying, my man was the dopest bullfrog. He came out in them flippers, was like, flap, flap, flap.
Yep.
Put it down, bitch.
And then
he was done. He was the one and done. That's where I learned it from.
Hey.
You know?
We teach each other.
I'm saying. Yeah. But that's exactly it. It's like, there are spaces where that does make sense, but there aren't a lot of them.
Yeah.
You know? And that's exactly it. It's like having the sensitivity to ask the tough questions and actually do the work. And that's why it's fucking work.
Yeah.
That's my opinion on it, you know.
Well, and around here there are plenty of opportunities if you can drive yourself.
Yeah.
If you can get to rehearsal, if you can get to those theaters and audition, show up for all the rehearsals, which sometimes 2 months of rehearsals, and then sometimes it's 3-4 weeks of performances. So it's a long time commitment for theater in this town. It's not the easiest for most people, yeah. right? Mm-hmm. So just because as a theater organization, if you put the Wiz on your season, it does not mean you're going to have a cast of black people coming in to right. audition for that. It does not mean that the people that are there should actually be there for one reason or the other, whether they are actually doing it because they want to or because they were coerced into it by somebody,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
It's really unfortunate that as a local culture, we haven't tried really challenging how we approach those situations in order to offer assistance for people, whether it's transportation, whether it's offering childcare services, whether it's offering reimbursement for gas or things like that when people legitimately need it.
Yeah,
I'm not talking about I'm inconvenienced, so I want $60 to reimburse me for this. Like,
right.
I'm fine.
Yeah.
I don't need that assistance.
Yeah.
But there are plenty of people that if they knew they had a reliable ride from someone else in the show to go to and from rehearsals and all these other things, they'd absolutely do it. But
yeah.
because they don't have that,
they can't make that promise.
They don't show up.
Yeah. Let's get one last question in. You mentioned going to New York.
Yep.
What are the dope shows on Broadway right now? What's the heat? What's the dopeness?
The hardest part right now with New York, in my opinion, is the fact that we're coming out of a pandemic, right?
Mm. Sure.
We don't have a lot of brand new works hitting Broadway, and that kind of has a ripple effect on the theater community as a whole.
Yeah.
If there isn't something new and challenging happening on the biggest of stages in theater, Broadway, you don't get to see that happen in the next couple of years at the smaller levels like community theater.
Sure.
Oh,
that's a good point.
So right now we have Music Man on Broadway with Hugh Jackman and Sutton Foster. You've got mixed reviews on it because it's kind of a shitty musical, let's be honest.
Yeah.
With all due respect to Meredith Wilson, it's a shitty musical.
I mean, yeah, I never thought of seeing Hugh Jackman as other than Wolverine. So.
Right. No, but he's that dude. Like, Hugh Jackman's a singing, dancing fool.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, really?
Broadway. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he did.
That's where he started a lot of show, musicals. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh.
And like, not just Greatest Showman.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
He was in like Les Mis.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
The movie version of Les Mis. He did the Showman with the Efron boy.
Yep. He's done
the Efron boy. Efron boy.
The Efron boy.
Yeah.
Efron boy.
But you've got all these like huge shows where even on Broadway, primarily white people in a lot of the main roles.
Yeah.
You've got certain shows that are really interesting, like Six is kind of a historical musical, not really musical, it's more of a like pop concert. It's kind of like if you took Spice Girls and K-pop with a historic like English story about
British Hamilton, essentially.
Yeah, British okay. Hamilton, British essentially. Hamilton. but you kind of push that into one theatrical experience with all kinds of diversity in the cast. It's just six women and four band members on stage, but it's really cool to see something so different.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, there's no real plot to it. It's just entertaining.
Okay.
You've got Hamilton, but ticket prices are always going to be $500 for, you know, the nosebleeds.
Sure. Yeah.
Especially on Broadway.
It's $500 for two tickets here.
Yeah,
yeah.
Right.
Like, yeah.
Who's got $500 for two tickets in Des Moines, Iowa?
Right. Like, I would like to see it live. But shout out Disney Plus and that $7 a month. I love to see
right?
it on stage.
That'll do.
I still haven't watched it.
Oh, I got a big ass TV, so you know, it's like being there. Yeah.
Right.
But I'll be honest, when I
it's
go
like
to
Lin-Manuel's nuts are right in my face.
Yeah. Well, between that and Encanto, shoot.
We don't talk about that. No.
So this is a segment we like to call This or That, where we ask our guest to make some difficult decisions in the heat of the moment. So we're going to start our lightning round of This or That with Charlie Reese. Dana, be Picasso. What you got?
Would you rather see a Broadway show right now that is the worst rated, or would you rather see a local show here with everyone that is the worst people that you've known ever to perform doing a musical?
Pick the worst of? Is this what we're doing here? Pick
worst,
the worst of?
Worst to Broadway or worst to local? Worst to Broadway.
Why?
Because at least they got it.
Because at least I don't have to sit through these assholes around here. Because at least I know they got to New York, so they have to have at least some level of talent, even if the show isn't that good. And I've seen some shit on Broadway that I was like, I wish I could get my money back from that shit. You know what I mean? Even this last trip, I saw some real fucking weird theater. But
speak
like,
on it. I need names.
Flying Over Sunset. It's basically like three historical celebrities, like Cary Grant, that take an LSD trip together.
Huh.
But it's like 2 hours 45 of three people taking the LSD trip together.
It's only fun for them.
It would have been more fun if I was on LSD watching.
There you go.
But just,
party favors necessary.
Just giving an example. But like, at least I know I can leave that theater and I'm still in New York. If I leave a theater here seeing some shit with people that I don't like, I'm fucking in Des Moines, Iowa.
You're going to see the same people at Trader Joe's.
Where the hell am I going?
Right? Like, now you got to sell me my Starbucks, and I got to say thank you like you didn't just suck.
Hey, bro, that was trash.
Yeah, then I got to run into them later on.
You both reaching for the last thing of toilet paper in the store. Like.
No, just get the fuck off that.
You don't deserve it.
Hey, what'd you think of the show? I said Sprite with no ice.
I said no ice. Not light ice, no ice.
Let there be one shit.
I like your hat.
You ever get caught in that situation where they're just like, what did you think of it? And in your mind, that was fucking terrible.
Oh, all the time.
What do you say?
I like your hat.
Too ready. Yeah. Too ready.
Yeah. I actually do like your hat.
He's just like, motherfucker, you say that to me all the time.
I'm the only person wearing a hat right
saying,
now.
But out there in these streets, or for me, let's be honest, it's more likely going to be shoes. Like, oh, those are pretty fresh.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I just walk away.
I usually say some shit like, I see what you were going for there.
Yeah.
Yeah, I see the vision.
Mm.
Interesting choices how I wouldn't have made those decisions, but, you know.
I'm not even going to front. I'm going to hit you with a classic black line. One of those classic black folks line, like, okay, I see you.
couldn't be me, though.
All right, now.
You are brave.
Wow.
That's a good one, too. Yeah. You are so brave. I appreciate your bravery.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So is this a lifelong dream?
Patty. Patty.
You know what my line is? You look like you had fun.
Yeah, I like that. That looked like a lot of fun.
That's a good one.
You don't know how the fuck I feel.
Right.
You look like you had a great time.
Yeah.
Were
you
happy? It looks good on you.
Yeah. How'd you feel about that performance?
Were you happy with it?
I thought it was great. Then it was
I think my personal favorite, though, and I use this with my children all the time, after they show me a cool trick, hey, if you like it, I love it. Like,
oh, that's cute.
Yeah, I'm not hurting your feelings. You liked it? I loved it. Keep it pushing.
Would you rather see a musical about Martin Luther King? Or a musical about Malcolm X.
Ooh.
Shit.
But Lin-Manuel Miranda writes them both.
Ooh. You know what?
Don't die, Dano. Don't die. You ain't going out yet.
MLK in the Heights.
I was going to say, on the you know
bridge.
What?
MLK.
MLK,
bridge.
MLK because white people have been telling that story for years at this point.
The man's not wrong.
At least it won't be worse than the way we've been learning it.
We're already at the bottom of the barrel here.
Manuel and Miranda, like, reaching out to...
We
Bruce
don't
Maricott.
Talk about MLK.
Hey, man, I need to get some ideas for this show I got coming up. I was just wondering if you could send me over some of the brothers.
Can you send me some of the FOI brothers so I can look some of their moves?
I've never had a bean pie.
I've heard good things.
Hey, potato. Wait till you try the bean.
Oh, my God. Oh.
But you're right. MLK would be the right answer. At least he would go out and find, like, a good gospel choir.
Yeah. Yeah.
He did do that.
He would do that.
Yeah. He would do that.
He would do that.
All right. He did do that.
I'm gonna make it a little bit easier for you. Talk about some classic movies, but as far as like movie musicals go and growing up in basically the same era, Lion King or Aladdin?
Oh, fuck. Whoa! I didn't
you
know I
easier.
Needed that one! Oh,
yes. Motherfucker, you said easy! Nah, you know what?
He's a Capricorn. You gotta keep your eye on this
one. Yeah, right?
True, I'm tricky.
I told my Aladdin story in our Christmas show.
That's right. That's right.
Where I wanted to see Home Alone 2, but my parents took me to see Aladdin, and I was really pissed, and then I really loved it.
Yeah. Turns out, best day ever.
Like, I was pissed. I was like, the fucking Home Alone 2. Nah, you were right.
He was lost in New York.
Trump.
I'm going to say Lion King, though.
Yeah. Good answer. Yeah.
Like, legitimately, I feel like Aladdin is entertaining, but in a lot of ways, it's just entertainment, right?
Yeah.
Versus Lion King, because it is rooted in a Shakespearean story, Hamlet, while being told from an African lens with all these different cultural kind of references and connections with it, I just think between the two that Lion King is a stronger, better musical.
Fair. Now, I will say, in the age of live action remakes, the live action Aladdin.
Oh, yeah, yeah, no, that's different.
Because of Beyonce, right?
I just thought that whole... No, actually, for me, it was Chiwetel. He ruined Scar's...
Oh,
really?
In the live action one. That is Billy Eichner and Joe, or in what's his face, Seth Rogen.
Seth Rogen.
Yeah, that didn't work for me either.
His non-singing ass was hilarious as Pumbaa, but also my ears were really unhappy. Yeah. Like, could you at least auto-tune him or something?
Poetry, stoner laughing, be prepared.
I never watched it.
Yeah.
He didn't do the stoner laughing.
Oh, of course he did. Yeah. He sounds like a warthog. Like, it's perfect. Oh my god! You could feel everybody's like they're trying, and then Beyonce just shows up and goes, "I'll just talk.
Yeah. I'll just be me."
Yeah, like, no accent, like, no, like full Houston.
This line is from Houston. What the
fuck? We're in Nebraska joints. Yeah, we flew some from the zoo.
Got saved in a hurricane. Like, fuck out of here.
Please love this new lion. We go eat this bitch. Oh my god.
Good answer.
But you know, you're on the cusp of a rant. I think it's time for Don't Get Me Started.
You know,
my man.
Needed it. You know, air horn.
So we were talking about this before the show, and then of course being a millennial who spends too much time on Twitter, I got beef with award shows. I got a lot of beef with award shows. And actually this is really out of character for me. What brought me back to this beef a couple days ago was baseball. Let me dig a little deeper.
Yeah, go off, man.
So, baseball recently had this thing going on where baseball players were saying, we don't make enough money, do something about it. And the owners were like, fuck y'all, we're just gonna cancel baseball. Me, as a member of the public, I don't give a fuck about baseball.
Here it is.
So? Like, cancel it then.
Like, y'all still play that?
Right? Like, I don't know. It digs deeper. But so in coming to the realization that I don't give a fuck about baseball, you were talking about, like, you were still, you want and deserve a local Emmy, right?
Yeah.
And I was like, damn, I don't give a fuck about the Emmys either.
Yeah.
And then I started thinking back, and it's been years since I've watched the Grammys. I used to love the Grammys.
That's right. We used to have Grammy parties,
right?
And shit. Yeah.
I don't give a fuck about the Grammys.
Huh.
That's facts.
And it all came down to this idea that people are trying to push things on us that we're supposed to care about without actually listening to what we enjoy.
Mm.
And it digs so deep, like... And nothing against Macklemore. Like, dude was humble about the whole situation. But that was the end of the Grammys for me. When Macklemore beat out Kendrick Lamar, Kanye West, Jay-Z, and Nicki Minaj for Best Rap Album of the Year.
Wow. Yeah.
Oh, I knew he was going to win that one. Yeah, like, you would hope that they would not make that decision.
But you just know that it didn't matter anymore.
It never mattered.
It was entertaining. At this point, it stopped being
entertaining. There it is.
Okay?
I'm with you.
I feel the same way about baseball as I do about these award shows. Like, you're paying this dude, like, that's really in the grand scheme of sports, not very athletic, like, literally hundreds of millions of dollars to go stand and wait for something to happen. And I'm supposed to feel bad for you because you're not making enough. And then in the award shows, it's like, you really want me to tune into your Oscars or your Grammys or your Tonys or this, that, and the other, but you don't listen to what the people actually care about.
Ever.
Why am I going to devote 3 hours of my time to you when I've already spoken my opinion with my dollars? I gave my money to the thing that I wanted to consume. Yeah. I supported the people that I wanted to support with my time. And so you're supposed to have this end-all, be-all word that this is better than everything else because we said something. It's like, but you don't listen to the people who are actually putting their money up or their time up to go and consume something. So just like baseball, I don't care about award shows.
Damn. And that's a word. Thank you forever for
speaking on it. It was that guy, Rye. What's up?
Sometimes my rants are calm, cool, and collected. Like, I've come to this consensus. This is what it is, and you're just going to have to accept it. Like, the fact that Macklemore has a rap album of the year.
That is true. History will show that apparently that year he was the best rapper. Oh. And then never another year ever again.
And then, yeah, apparently he has a new album out that I have some white friends that say it's dope. So I'll take their word for it.
I don't need to hear it. So this brings us to our final segment, the top three. And of course, for all of our listeners, you can find the top three on Spotify. It is a cumulative playlist. As this season grows, the playlist will also grow. So you can tap in to the music that moves us month by month, but also what our special guests are also into these days. It's a jam. It's a bop. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Every episode, more songs. So go and check it out. Listen to the songs we picked last time. Listen to the stuff Dante liked. But we're going to pick some new top threes today, right here on this spot. So we're gonna go just like kind of in a circle, and just everyone's just gonna keep dropping a new song on the list. So my first pick, since we talked about Singing in the Rain,
yep,
I've been like just living this song. It's called Beautiful Girl from Singing in the Rain. It's this really kind of the way we're doing it. It's much more balladesque. It's very big and lush and beautiful, and very like very smarmy. Very, you know, yes, let's all sway and snap our fingers. Like, I've just been living that song, so that's my first pick for today, is Beautiful Girl from the musical Singing in the Rain.
I respect it. All right, I'll go next. For me, much of the month of March, it's about to be my guy G's birthday here in a couple weeks, so a lot of my songs are ones that make me think of him to this day. So my first one for the list is going to be Doing It Right by Daft Punk.
Oh, yeah.
Because G was a big Daft Punk fan.
Amen.
And so I got to give them some props. That's the one that, I don't know, me and the kids, we have some epic car concerts to that song after we pick them up from school. So, yeah, special place.
Fire.
Yeah.
Yesterday, I was out shopping with my significant other, and while we were in the store, this song by Yuna featuring G-Eazy came on, and it's called Black Marky. And it gets to the chorus bridge, and it just kind of kicks in this groove. And I just kind of caught myself in the store, like, you know, like kind of losing the thought that I was in a store.
Bopping, you know, through, like, the cereal aisle, feeling it.
Yo, sometimes.
Through the store, like, yeah, this shit's kind of nice. And, like, you know, our millennial habits of raising our phone up to Shazam a song, which I'm not the nigga to do that ever.
Oh.
Like, I'm not one that will do that to like, if I don't know it, I'm just like, fuck it.
You look goofy in public. Yeah, you all the way. You're like,
as shit. So the fact that I pulled my phone out and was like, what the fuck is this? While like dancing and grooving around, and I'm looking at myself in the little Snapchat thing. Like, so yeah, I gotta give it to Yuna for that one. Black Marky is a nice song.
Okay.
Nice.
Can't wait to hear.
Yeah.
Charlie.
So actually this one I heard on the drive over here.
Yeah.
And I was like, you know what? I'm going to include this one just because it takes me back to fucking middle school.
Mm. Oh, a deep cut.
It's a deeper cut. But it takes me back to hanging out with some of my friends. It takes me back even just to high school, hanging out, like driving around in the car and just
scooping the loop. Sorry, I didn't mean to call you out like that.
We all been there.
But you're right. And also, because I just want this to be in your playlist.
Yeah.
TLC No Scrubs.
Yay! That is the loop song.
It's
one of
them. Like,
as high schoolers with no cars.
I didn't have a fucking car. But also, I was that asshole hanging out at
But we had plenty of girls that were driving us around in their car, so we
yeah,
had a real
yeah,
scrub.
That right, part right. Too. Who's the scrub now, bitch?
It's me.
I got a car now. Goddamn it, it's nice too.
I love No Pigeons.
I mean, yeah, that was one of the greatest classic callback songs ever.
Yeah, that both of that song, but just the fact that they did that song, I love the
shit. They were never heard from again.
No.
But they
not
put
never.
They had their moment. They had their moment. But they still scrubs. That's the problem.
Right.
Is that they're like, well, we don't. Like, all right, scrub. Thanks. Thanks, scrub. Thanks.
It was catchy.
I'm glad you had an opinion. That's cool. That's cool.
Timeless piece of music.
I said Sprite, no ice. I was
telling you. But you looked like you had fun.
My second pick is this song called Yams. I've heard it everywhere I go. I cannot escape this song.
What's that though?
Yeah. That song is a bop. I was trying to roast it at first. I was like, what the fuck is this?
Huh.
But like the more I listen to it, the more I'm like, oh, damn. Like they throw some of that like slick Take Six style jazz vocals, which is like, that's coming back. That's dope. Like I watched the video even. Like I don't even watch music videos these days. Like that's just not my bag. Like I just... not my thing.
Yeah,
I like to listen. I like to catch a vibe. I don't necessarily want to watch it unless it's like really, like special, something that's really unique. But I was like, yeah, let me see what the visual is on this thing, because like, what could this song be? What could this video be?
Mm-hmm.
And it's exactly what I thought it was gonna be. Like yams is the booty, but it's also actual literal yams. Like this man went from eating pussy to like eating dinner with his grandma in the same 3-minute video, and I was like, you know what? I gotta same spoon. She's like, baby, grab it. He's like, I got one. Can I get it again? Yeah, it was, and so yeah, that's like, it's one of those earworms that like I didn't know I was gonna love it, but you know what? I don't hate it.
There you go.
I'll give me a plate too.
Yeah, eat up.
Nom, nom, nom. All right, for number two, I'm gonna give G this one too. It's definitely gotta be "Viva La White Girl" by the Gym Class Heroes.
Yo.
It's one of my favorite Cocaine songs ever.
So. Yeah.
Haven't heard that one in a while.
Yes. So, I mean, the normal one will be on the playlist, but also take the time, hit up SoundCloud, go or YouTube, whatever, and go find the remix featuring Lil Wayne, because the Viva La White Girl remix with Lil Wayne is also, like, from that era when Wayne was, like, in his bag on every feature,
mm-hmm.
and it was one that was lesser known.
Yeah, that time when Wayne just could not miss.
Yeah. And
even when he tried, he couldn't
kills
miss.
This one. So, yeah, Viva La White Girl, Gym Class Heroes. Makes you want to do cocaine. I mean, it is what it is.
Okay,
it can snow in March.
After you hit that line from Gym Class Heroes, let's roll on into some Shabba Ranks.
Hey!
Oh!
Hey.
So that ain't my her forever, right?
I know, right? So I was scrolling through the book the other day and ran into Shabba Ranks' Ting-a-ling video. And I was excited and happy and overjoyed that I have never seen that video before until that moment. And yeah, you know, got my little rock and little wine going, and you get to see just, you know, just all the classic things, the school kid, the Jamaican school kids in the
mm-hmm.
video, and you get to see your classic Jamaican dance hall dancers with the black top and black bottoms and the winding and the breaking, the move around. It just, I couldn't help but
to
think
to another place.
And for me. Listening to the song right now is almost like the call for me to be outside since the season is almost here.
It is y'all.
It's almost upon us.
And so with the season approaching, I was like, let me find something. You know, this might
bump. It's supposed to be like in the 60s all this week coming up too.
Yeah, so you know, maybe that's something we're gonna roll the windows down to.
Yeah.
Let that rock outside.
Who fucks with it?
Charlie, it's on you.
Okay, this one is more for me, but I really like this one. So this goes back to 2005. I picked like some older songs.
Hey, we're
like,
here
that's,
for it.
That's
this is your moment, man.
Yep.
The aughts were a wild time for music.
It really was.
2005, MTV Unplugged.
Ooh.
Alicia Keys.
Ooh. Really?
Back when she was good.
Diary.
Ooh. Yes!
Yeah.
Yes, Charlie!
I won't tell your secrets!
Woo!
And then as she's wailing out, she's going to town on the piano, her backup singer.
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember his fucking name all
Isn't
of a sudden.
He a member of Tony?
Tony, thank you.
Was he? I know he did the voice
Off
of that.
No, he's like, one of the members of Tony.
Yeah, he was.
Oh, shit, I didn't know that.
Deadass.
He goes fucking off.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
In that song.
Yeah,
That was a moment.
That's a moment. Me, like... walking around in college, that's me in the military listening to this song. I won't tell! Like, I'm going.
I'm telling you. I remember my sister Lo was one of the first people that I heard that song with. And I was laughing because I was just enamored by the fact that she just kept singing about how she wouldn't tell your secrets. Mm-hmm. So every time she got finished with saying she wouldn't tell, I'd get right in the back and get a real, I'm a snitch on you. and just, you know, kind of let it go. And I mean, for a while, it was one of those things that, you know, you irritate somebody with. Uh-huh. And I was that person.
To this day, yeah.
And to this day, it's just one of those funny things that I can sit and listen to and think about, wow.
it's funny how those songs just, like, take you back to, like, those moments.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you can see them so clearly. Like, mm-hmm. like not to get too, like, poetic or like emotional about it, but it's like it's so crazy how like some of those moments just, it's like you're living it right there, and like when those bars hit, you're like, yep,
facts,
2005, there I am, like goof looking goofy, like so my last pick, speaking of going back to 2005,
oh, shit.
But also because, like, of course, like most, I watched the Genius documentary on Netflix about Kanye West. Mm. It just re-enamored me with the song Through the Wire. It sparked that thing of, like, I forgot just how dope of a song that is. Mm-hmm. From its arrangement, from the spirit of, like, where it comes from, the willingness to grind through the, like, the worst tragedy that's right in front of you. The freedom in like living like that trauma and finding the victory inside of it. Like, you know, like I honestly believe that song, singularly that song, and maybe coupled with Jesus Walks, but like that song was the song that bought the goodwill that he is still enjoying to this day from the fans that still, like, give him a chance. You know what I mean? Like, it's that kind of work that makes you go, man, he's really fucking up, but maybe it's another Through the Wire. You know what I'm saying? Like that's really, I feel like, and it hits me in the weirdest times. I'm in the shower, and all of a sudden, I'm just like, I'm like, oh, shit, didn't realize we're going to do that. Or, like, I'm making some lunch. You know, I'm paying some bills. Like, it's just all these things. It's like, it, like, underscores all of these moments for me in the last couple weeks. And it's just like, damn, I didn't realize.
Fuck that documentary, man.
Yeah, like, I haven't watched the third part yet.
Neither have I.
Because I after watching it's the sobering, second dude. Part.
It's sobering.
Watching the second part was just like, I was so overwhelmed because it was just like all the shit that happened.
Especially because I'm mad at him right now. Like, why are you so shitty, bro? And then I watch this and I'm like, and I remember off of that song and that video, mm-hmm. like going into Best Buy and being like, yo, when does this shit drop?
Right.
Like, still going into the record store.
I want his thing.
When does this shit drop? And mm-hmm. then they're being like, oh, well, it'll be here. And they kept getting pushed. Like,
yep.
Which they talk about in the documentary. The album kept getting pushed. And finally, when it dropped. And I've been a fucking fan ever since. And
yeah.
Now I'm having to, like, this is the first time ever I'm like, no, bro, you need some help. You're on to, like, some real out of control,
I think,
pocket type shit.
You actually were the one that played the video for
yes.
me the very first
yes,
time. And you're like,
I
yo,
was.
Check this out. And I was like, okay, cool. And we were sitting in my house.
Yeah.
And you were like, yo, check this. And I was like,
mm-hmm.
What is this?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I didn't understand what I was even singing at the moment, because,
like,
I was a dumb fucking kid or whatever. But like yeah, I'm sitting there, like, just
yeah.
kind of taking it in, going, okay. But it's, I think in the context now, looking back, it's like, oh, that's what it was. Mm-hmm. Like, I needed time to really let it land and to be reminded of just how good of a record that was
facts.
And still is. So I'm putting it on the list because Through the Wire, still
certified
a banger.
Bob.
Still a banger.
All-time classic.
Yeah. He put
yeah.
the other classic on that one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, man. All right. Well, my number three is actually a more recent one by another problematic black hero. Toby. I still don't know how to
Nugwe?
Yeah, thank you. Featuring Paul Wall, Juice. Because
Paul
Wall is definitely in my top five white rappers of all time. And he proves it, the reason why, on this song.
Yeah.
I actually prefer Paul on it over Toby.
Yeah.
But even, and also, came across the video. He's one of the only dudes out here still making, like, consistent music videos, and it happened to come across my timeline, like, a few months back, and I've been knocking that song ever since.
Yeah.
I love
yeah.
the color, the teal color.
Yeah,
that he,
like, mint
that he, like,
greenish
yeah.
color.
Sticks
yeah.
to.
Yeah.
Like,
he's got a great creative angle to what he does.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And that's what makes his hip-hop so, like, special.
Because,
mm-hmm. like, he, the mean man has bars.
Oh, yeah.
I mean,
undeniable.
I will say, I've been a fan for a while.
Yeah.
And this does not change my fandom or my appreciation for him and Fat and what they've built. But I will say, like, he's a little repetitive. Like, it's like, all right, yeah, I need some new bars. Like, you need some other life experiences. Because right now, you're productive, but you're just saying the same stuff to a new beat. Mm-hmm. But it's the creative thing where I'm like, but this video slaps. The visuals, I'm like, yo, that's Step. What was that?
Yeah.
Oh, who's that singer? Hold up, what was that?
Sitting on the basketball hoop.
Right, right. And so, like, those moments are, like, iconic. Those are really cool. And, like, the colors.
He brought
and
back
the...
Paul Wall.
Right.
I heard shit from Paul Wall in ages.
Now, that's a miracle.
Like, right.
But yeah.
Like, since Drive Slow off Kanye's second album, I don't think that's, like, the last time I really heard some real Paul Wall shit.
Hmm. Huh. Same, actually.
Yeah.
All right, your turn. We're continuing to stay outside. I just thought of the song in my head, and it was, like, clearly where I needed to be right about now. But I'm going to give my third pick to Gangsta Boo with Where the Dollar's At.
Respect.
Because, like, I mean, like I said, like, you know. Women's History Month. That's perfect. Yeah. But, I mean, with the way, like I said, the season's coming. I need a little fundraiser myself, trying to have me a wonderful birthday season.
Right?
So
hell
you
yeah.
know,
hell yeah.
Where them dollars at? Let me get a little something for my trip.
There you go.
Trying to relax for that birthday season. Need some cake.
Amen.
Little bread.
I'm not mad at that.
Chatter.
Trying to hit the brunch spots.
All right, last song on the list for this episode of Strictly for My Neighbors.
So we talked earlier about my, like, influences
yeah.
as far as who I am and everything. What I didn't talk about, right, is some of my musical influences. It wasn't all Golden Age musicals. It wasn't all, you know.
Yeah.
And I kind of struggled with this one because I was like, do I do something that, like, is really just me, or do I do something that means more to me now? Things like that. And I think at the end of the day, I'm not the kind of performer I am. I'm not the kind of presenter that I am if it weren't for Motown.
Okay.
Mm. Motown had a huge influence on me, understanding that there were so many different perspectives and approaches to music and musicality and performance and things like that. And even just as simple as the Temptations taking a step away from the mic but all coming back together.
Hello.
Or, you know,
Slide Out.
You know, like, there's so many groups that you can pull out. Jackson 5. You can pull so many groups out of Motown and just think of how huge of an impact it had culturally in the United States. Yeah. And with all due respect to my race, I think that we have too much playtime. There is not enough time given to other voices. So I wanted to take it back to Motown. I want to take you to 1972. I want to take you to Temptations. Papa was a Rolling Stone.
Ooh.
Come on, Papa!
Yeah.
Because hear me out. When I'm listening to music, when I am experiencing something, I want to feel a story. I want to feel like I am kind of disengaging from my world, and I want to be in someone else's story, right? And I feel like one of the first songs where I really genuinely felt that, Papa was Rolling Stone, because asking his mama why dad's not around, and she's telling him all about how he went around town, he had a lot of different women, and we don't talk about him anymore. And, you know, all these things within this story. It wasn't my life story. It wasn't something that I was used to, but it absolutely made me pause, take a step back, and reconsider what storytelling is. And I think it was one of those songs that had a huge influence on me early on.
I respect it.
Triggered.
Yo, that's an epic way to go out. Pop was a Rolling Stone, right?
Yo.
I'm going to go home and cry now. Triggered.
Yeah, that was the one.
Yeah, that was the one.
Damn, let's play this.
It was
the third.
Triggered.
Gonna go hug your mom. Like,
it's okay, mom.
Fuck that nigga. That's what I tell my mom.
So to hear all these songs, you can find the playlist, the top three, Strictly for My Neighbors. You can find it on Spotify. Plug in, you'll hear the episodes, or you'll hear songs from the last few episodes and all the episodes to come. So tap in. Catch a vibe, listen to what we listen to, and get to know us a little bit better.
Good tunes, Pondy Head.
I'm saying we have good taste. True. We promise to bring you the bops, and we'll keep bringing the bops.
We have facts.
And of course, this now is the time where we have to go our separate ways and finish our show for today. I want to thank everyone for watching Strictly for My Neighbors. Once again, I am Madison Ray.
I'm That Guy Ray.
And Dan O'B Picasso.
And I'm Charlie Reese.
Hey! Hey.
Who made that shirt, though, Charlie Reese?
Oh, this shirt is made by That Guy Ray. Right.
Hey! You can get your own.
Get your own Kim Reaper shirt.
Yeah. Either hit me up, or I'll send you the link. Otherwise, you can go on TeePublic and search for That Guy _ Rye or Kim Reaper. Either or. It'll take you right there. You can get T-shirts, hoodies, face masks, throw pillows, stickers, coffee mugs, whatever you need. You can put my shit on it.
And then I'll wearing this shit every day until we vote her out.
Till
we
get
vote
all her the out gear so you can say, fuck that bitch.
Yo! One of my coworkers goes to church with her, and I'm like, bro, I need you to do
necessary
it.
Necessary. I need you to get that selfie. Get the selfie.
Right with the, I need it.
That would be brilliant. Yeah. So yeah, support our guy. Get that merch.
Yeah.
Thanks.
He supports. Yeah. Get that merch.
Thanks.
Keep supporting your neighbors. Subscribe, like, share this video, share this podcast, and keep the party going. Thank you so much for watching. We'll catch you next time.
Same black time.
Same black channel. Peace.